Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. As always, joining me, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on the Twitterses. And there's Andrew right over there. And Andrew, too bad there's nothing to talk about in politics this week.
Yeah, I don't know. What the hell are we going to do? I mean, it's summer, you know, the usual slow days of summer.
Oh, sure. The usual slow days of summer. yeah, that's not a thing now. As it turns out, we have a burgeoning political and constitutional crisis on our hands here because, you know, nobody's really sure who's actually running the country at the moment, Andrew. I mean, you've got...
It's amazing.
Biden just had... I mean, we talked about it last week. This terrible debate performance, and he hasn't done anything to reset the debate on that, the debate on the debate. In the meantime, you had people like former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson going on MSNBC saying, well, it really doesn't matter because, you know, as long as they got the right people around them, that's all that really matters. And it's like, really? So what you're telling me is the plot of the movie, the 1993 movie Dave, and I'm getting this from Free Press, who drew this, I mean, once Kat Rosenfeld posed this, it was like, yeah, she's right. This is the perfect analogy. Do you remember this movie, 1993?
Yeah, oh, I loved it. It's one of my faves.
Kevin Kline as the president.
You're really good as the president, but she really needs some help.
It was a great scene. That was Sigourney Weaver, who was the real first lady. Yeah, it was so fun. It really is it's a fun movie, but, you know, Andrew, the reason why it was a fun movie is because it was so absurd. It could never actually happen, right?
Yeah.
But now you've got Hunter Biden inserting himself into policy discussions with cabinet secretaries and on phone calls. Mm-hmm. White House staff went to NBC News to raise the alarm on that. Right after the family held a meeting at Camp David and insisted that Joe Biden was going to stay in the race, right? Then Joe Biden does George Stephanopoulos interview. What'd you think of the Stephanopoulos interview? Let's just start there. What'd you think of the Stephanopoulous interview? Because
it did nothing to change the agenda. Nothing can change the agenda, I don't think. It was so bad, that debate. You don't get over dementia, whatever it is that's got him. You don't get over it. And someday, maybe sooner rather than later, we'll find out why he's taking 40% of the term off and going to Delaware, where his visitors are not recorded. You know, they were making a big deal today out of the Parkinson doctor visiting the White House, but what he's got is not, I mean, that's motor problems, Parkinson's. His is mental, and you don't get over that. And, you know, he's not going to come around by the next debate or by the election or by 1986, by 2026. It's basically over. But as I pointed out in the column on Sunday, there's no personal or political reason for him to quit. He's got the delegates. They can't get him. The cabinet has no cojones for ousting the guy who gave him their job. He could ride it out, and I probably will ride it out for at least a while. He may have to quit eventually, or they may get together and figure something out, but there's no reason for him to quit, certainly before the convention, I don't think. Starting in two weeks, or on the 19th, we're going to be all focused on Donald Trump and the terrible threat. His face will be on the Jumbotron, the terrible threat that Donald Trump is, and that'll change the midsummer topic of discussion.
Do you think, though? I mean, First off, let us reflect upon the fact that Donald Trump has apparently read Sun Tzu, right? Or von Clausewitz or somebody.
Yeah, that's right.
Whoever advised people not to interfere when your enemy is busy destroying himself.
That's Trump right.
Apparently read that.
No, that's great. That's great.
Quiet.
Yeah. I mean, it there's real hope in the debate. Well, for maybe 2/3 or 3/4 of it, he was very disciplined. That's why I thought no audience and silent mics, that was a real benefit for him. I mean, the karma of this thing is just so exquisite. You know, I mean, Joe Biden's, whoever's pulling his strings. So, we're going to knock Trump out early, right? We're going to have this early debate. He said, well, wait a minute. You think he's up? You think the boss is up to a debate? Oh, yeah, we'll get him. We'll get no mics so he can't interrupt. We'll get no audience so he won't play to them. We'll get our favorite people at CNN. And it all blows up in his face.
I mean, honestly, I don't even understand. I don't understand how anybody can make that decision. And you and I talked about this prior to the debate, right? That we were surprised that this debate was still going to take place because we both had figured that this was just a rhetorical setup so that Joe Biden could withdraw and say, the president of the United States should not share a stage with a convicted felon.
Exactly. That's what would make sense. But I think they got full of themselves because he pulled off the State of the Union, which was 81 minutes and the debate is 90. Now, as you said last week, the State of the Union is talking and reading from the teleprompter, which he has trouble with. It's not a debate where you get the questions thrown at you. So whoever's advising him, they need to get canned. I mean, it's just, they think, oh, well, it was okay in the State of the Union. We can pull this off. Oh. Boy, you know, yeah. It's like a Greek tragedy. Your own pride brings you down.
Yeah, hubris, right? I mean, that's a quintessential Greek tragedy. You know, I'd reach for the narcotics analogy of getting high on your own supply, because that's exactly what happened with Team Biden. They got high on their own supply by putting him on stage like that. And what fascinates me about this is that the people closest to him should have seen this coming, right? Because they have been protecting him for a couple of years. And I keep going back to this incident from Easter of 2022, right? 2022.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
2.25 years ago, right? Joe Biden is out on the lawn. And this is, you know, it's a light, you know, it's always a light, you know, fluffy event, right? I mean, even without the Easter bunny, you know, the fluffy part is just the PR of it. And nobody takes it seriously. The whole idea is to put your softer side out there for the public, which is fine. It's good. And every president does this. But then Biden starts wandering over to the press pool. And again, this is 2.25 years ago.
Yeah.
And the Easter bunny comes running up and throws himself in front of Biden doing this, right? Waving his arms so that he gets Biden's attention, first off, and blocks his access to the press and then guides him away.
Yeah.
And we saw that at the time and we said, why is the Easter Bunny blocking Biden? What is that about? And nobody in the White House press corps followed up on that. Nobody did.
No, I mean, it was a skyrocket going off. And I think it was a woman, and I think it was on a communication staff, and I think her job was to do just that. And I mean, it worked, and you had this obedient press. So maybe Biden's staff that let this debate go ahead bought their own, what is it? You buy your own poison? They bought their own belief. Oh, he can pull this off, but he can't. He's been getting worse, not better. You don't get better. It'll never get better. And it's a huge disaster for him, but there's no reason other than, say, national security or thinking about the country for a change. There's no reason for him to quit. He can coast at least till his convention, which is what? It's 5 weeks after the Republican one. So 7 weeks from now, roughly.
I think it's 4 weeks after the Republican one. I could be wrong about that. No, I think you're right. I think it is 5 weeks. I think you're right. I think it's 5 weeks. So it's about 7 weeks from now, because the Republican convention is coming up in less than two, right?
Right. Yeah. From today. I mean, we're on Monday, but 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from, yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow as we're recording this, 2 weeks from today as it's going to get posted. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And what I find, again, I mean, there's so many different layers to this, but I want to focus on the Hunter Biden thing, because I'm going to actually have a commentary on it for Salem Radio. I want to talk about it a little bit. Because, again, NBC News reported this last week that Hunter Biden suddenly inserting himself into policy discussions at the White House. White House staffers are concerned enough to leak it to NBC News. NBC News actually publishes this thing and says, well, this seems kind of weird.
A convicted felon.
A convicted felon, somebody who is going to be tried again pretty soon over tax evasion charges. And he's... seems to be at least in the decision-making loop, if not making decisions for his father. Jill Biden is also clearly very influential, let us say, in Biden's decision on what to do from this point forward. Why? And I get the fact that the media is kind of covering the horse race angle of this. Will Biden run? Won't Biden run? What's the polls look like? What I haven't heard a lot, a little bit, but not a lot, is whether or not Biden's actually in charge now, whether or not he actually has the capacity for this office now, or if Jill and Hunter are actually running the White House and the executive branch using Biden, you know, propping Biden up
to do like it. Like Edith Wilson in the Wilson administration. Yeah. Oh, I think you're absolutely right. He can't make any decisions. And as I, another thing I pointed out in the column was, well, okay, his excuse to Stephanopoulos, who, remember, he pulled Bill Clinton's butt out of the bimbo eruption. So they go to him when they get in trouble with the Afghan exit or with this debate. So Biden says, well, I was just exhausted.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I mean, I would cut that out. I would make an ad. Do we want a guy? Because, you know, oh, I went to Europe two times. Well, he's not sitting in the middle seat on four cross Atlantic, transatlantic flights. Okay. He's got his own executive suite. He can even run the curtains with a remote control. He's got a full-time steward, a nice bathroom, comfy bed. So, you know, I can't buy that. Remember when he started to sit down and something happened? Hopefully not what I'm afraid of. And Jill had to lead him off from the D-Day event. So he didn't meet the old timers.
That was very strange. I mean, he just walked off the stage and leaving Macron there to greet the veterans, the few surviving veterans that were able to attend.
Yeah, but it was so funny. It was, you know, he started to sit down and then he froze. And then he leaned over and said something to Jill. And you think, oh, geez, you know what it looks like? Like he was standing in the driveway with his legs apart. I've seen babies do that. And, you know, you grow up where your parents are taking care of you as a little baby, and then suddenly you're an old timer and your kids are taking care of you. It's the way of life for some of us, sadly, and we've all seen it in our families. Somebody fades away, and I keep coming back. You don't get better, but he could hang in there. I mean, he's getting $400,000 a year, so one more month of that salary. He's not donating it to the Park Service like Trump.
No. The Biden family doesn't pass up opportunities for income.
And there may be some more checks on the way from China. I mean, it's just,
one of the reasons why you got to be concerned about what Hunter Biden's doing in there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. He's still getting paid, as far as we know.
Yeah. Yeah. Lord only knows what's going on in there now. And honestly, Congress had better find out. There are some rumblings
among
House Republicans that they're going to try to start subpoenaing the official physician of the White House to ask him, you know, what he actually found. Executive I don't know how much privilege. You can penetrate that, though.
Yeah, executive privilege, whatever.
Yeah.
And they don't have the, I come back, you and I have talked about this, or I've talked at you about this. Benghazi, I mean, four guys died. They didn't plan for it. They didn't plan for rescue. They didn't plan for reinforcements. And what happened? Nothing. Nothing. Admiral Moore, he just whitewashed the whole thing. There's no one to blame. Hello, the president was AWOL for 16 hours. Hillary Clinton didn't do anything. And Panetta said, defense secretary said, well, you know, you don't send troops in when you don't know what's going on. Well, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you send troops. I mean, it's just
what's going on. Yes.
Yeah, so how many weeks were months of the Trey Gowdy House hearings nothing, absolutely nothing. So I have no confidence that anything is going to happen. Washington is one part. Yeah, Afghanistan. Exactly.
They lost 13 people at Abbey Gate. They abandoned 14,000 Americans in Afghanistan without any idea how they were going to try to get them out. They abandoned them to the Taliban. I mean, it was an absolute disgrace. And Trump hammered Biden all night long during the debate about it. And Biden never did have a response for it.
No, there isn't any. There isn't any. You know, people say, in fact, I think maybe it was Trump who said there's some generals should be fired. No, the president should be fired. He countered them. The generals had a plan. We're going to keep at least 2,500 troops there to control an evacuation. Biden said no. He changed the evacuation date by three times already into the peak fighting season. No, I want everybody out. So they followed the president's orders and they got everybody out. I mean, all the troops out. And Bagram got sacked moments later. But the generals were the ones who had 8,000 troops standing by because they knew they were going to have to go back in. And that's when they got killed. There's no general should be fired. President should be fired. He doesn't trust the military and he doesn't trust the Secret Service. Did you read that I forgot where it was now. I guess it was Substack about the dogs, about his dogs.
But
I mean, it's much bigger than we thought.
Yeah.
There are dozens of now.
Yeah, something like 25 different bite events or something like that.
Exactly. With two different dogs who they haven't trained. I mean, they shouldn't have a dog. Turley wrote a column saying that if this was in court and not a president, which, by the way, having dogs there is not an official act, so he should be. He should be liable.
Immunity.
All of a sudden, he's all for presidential immunity. But you know, people who like animals are usually pretty good. But people who have and don't control animals, they got animals for the wrong reason. I mean, those are people that walk into the 7-Eleven with a pit bull, and that's.
We mentioned 1993's Dave. There was actually another presidential comedy from about 15, 20 years, about 15 or so years ago. It had Ray Romano and Gene Hackman in it called Welcome to Mooseport. That one didn't get very good reviews, but actually I found it absolutely charming and delightful. I thought it was funny as hell. And but there's a scene where Gene Hackman plays this retiring president, the most popular president of all time. And he's stepping off of it's a helicopter. He's stepping out of a limousine, and he's got this, you know, little dog by the leash. And as soon as the people are done taking pictures, he tosses the leash aside. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Other than it's a photo op sort of thing, right? And
That's in Dave too. Remember? He goes out on the real president goes out on the porch with the dog on a leash and waves and comes in and throws the leash away.
You know, I think it's actually in both movies. I don't think I've misremembered it. I believe it's in,
I'm agreeing with you. It was in both. It's a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, so there's all sorts of cinematic ways that you can look at it. And it's not a comedy at the moment because at the center of this is you've got an old man who's sick, who's being manipulated by the people around him, the people who should really be caring more about him than anything else. And it very much looks like they're manipulating him to keep their own grip on power and money and prestige and influence.
Exactly. I should have recorded her name. I had a Twitter follower yesterday, and she said, when is somebody going to start thinking about the country there? It's a very good question. I mean, that is the key question. None of them they're thinking about, his career, keeping their influence peddling business going, what it will look like in history. Wait a minute, there's nobody at the helm of the country. And we already had Ukraine, which didn't happen on Trump's watch. It's early. I mean, it's still early. Axelrod said, who I have great respect for, although I did beat him on a big story in Chicago once when he was a reporter. Axelrod said that if he keeps this up, he's going to lose in a landslide. I don't know how he's terrible in the polls, but I don't know how he's doing that well. Honestly, I don't think people want to see it. It's scary. I don't want to see that my relative is loony in the head. I don't want to see it.
You know,
all the anguish that goes into taking the keys away from grandpa.
No, I mean, and I think you're right about that. I mean, I think that you're right about that. I think that in part, some of his standing in the polls is still sort of static. Well, no, I think it's inertia to some extent. I don't think people have moved yet. But I will say this. First off, the polls have moved. Harry Enten was on CNN this morning and actually had a pretty good segment on this. Trump is now leading in the polls in early July. Do you know the last time that a Republican presidential candidate was leading in the national polls in early July?
No.
2000.
Really?
George W. Bush was the last Republican president. He didn't even do it in 2004 when he actually eventually won.
And that turned out kind of close in 2000.
Well, it did.
I was there.
You were there, but he's the last Republican. And Enten goes on to point out that Trump actually never led in the aggregate polling averages in 2016, and yet he still ended up winning the election because he outperformed the polls.
Yeah.
So he never led 4 years ago. He never led 8 years ago. Now he's 1-1. Right? He won in 2016. He lost in 2020. But this is the first time in three cycles that he has led in a general election campaign at all. At all. And if you look at the polling over the last 12 days,
that's a good point. Yeah.
There's only one poll in which Joe Biden even gets into a tie. And I was looking at it earlier today because I've got a post coming up later Monday evening. So it'll be up by the time this thing gets published. But all the other polls here are Trump, Trump's ahead, but it's also a number of them are outside the and this is national polls. I'm not talking about state polls. Battleground polls look terrible for Biden too, but the national polls, Biden is trailing in many cases outside the margin of error now, and this is only the first.
The first round,
right? And it's,
well, if you go back to the spring, only one president since World War II has had a job approval rating under in the 30s and won. And that was Truman. Now, that's a while back, but it was a Democrat. And he won in 1948. So it's, even with that, never mind the debate. The debates should cinch it. But I don't know. America, things have been so weird. I always go back to historical patterns, and you know, I should go look at the Jimmy Carter in July of 1980, see how he was doing against Reagan.
I think he was trailing. I mean, again, you know.
Yeah. You had the Iran hostages. Yeah.
The Iran hostages thing you had. And again, Enten was just making the point that George W. Bush was the last Republican to lead in July in 2000. Yeah. But he certainly wasn't the first one. I mean, Reagan probably led both of those. And I don't think George H.W. Bush led in 1988. He certainly didn't in 1992. But I don't think he did in 1988 either, because he had sort of a comeback during the general election. Dukakis was actually out in front, and then Dukakis took a ride in a tank.
You know, I drove a tank once. This has nothing to do with being president, but I was covering a National Guard summer camp, and they said, "Yeah, you want to drive this thing? That's tricky. You know, there's no steering wheel."
Stick driven, right? I mean,
it's two sticks. Yeah, two sticks, one for each tread. So, so you can really go pro crazy. And that's why, you know, I always wondered until recently why you see Russian tankers wearing those goofy helmets that are all padding on the top. That's because you're getting thrown around in there. And they had padding on the thing, and they said, well, be very careful because you hit a bump. You move, but the tank is gliding and your face will go right into the tank. Oof. When your head's sticking out the window driving it. It was interesting, but hats off to those guys.
Yeah, hats off definitely to presidential candidates too. And there are two rules in presidential campaigns. Never put on a hat and never eat a hot dog.
Yeah.
And those are the two rules. I'm just telling you, don't put on a hat and don't eat a hot dog if you're a presidential candidate, because the photo op is never going to come out well. You're never going to look good in those photos. I'm just telling you that.
Right. Yeah, no pictures while you're eating. I worked for a politician, he would never eat at an event. It's just too dangerous. But, you know, from a strictly political point of view, forgetting the country, I mean, who cares about the United States of America? It's great. The longer he hangs on, it's great for Republicans.
Well, right. And again, let's get back to Donald Trump, because a couple of things.
Shut up, right?
Yeah. Shut up. Shut up, he explained. And he's done that.
Where's that from? That's a great line.
Shut up, he explained. I don't know. That's a meme that's been going around for years. I love it. That's you know, it's sort of explains how people don't actually respond. They just try to shut you down when you're offering criticism. But you know, I think it was Biden this morning on Morning Joe was saying, oh, I'm running. Yeah. You know, this old man raging thing that he had going on the, did you watch any of those clips?
Cause it was, on the weekend. Yeah. I didn't watch.
No. This morning. Yeah. It was this morning where he was
Sundown
Joe on Morning Joe. Exactly. You're exactly correct about that. And, you know, he's doing the whole angry Joe Biden thing, which is apparently nobody's told the White House that inappropriate anger is actually a symptom of dementia. Yeah. You know, not being able to engage with anything but anger is a symptom. It's
a
problem.
You know, it was a sad thing, and I was a little kid at the time, but my grandfather would be teaching me. He had hardening of the arteries. He would be teaching me whittling on the porch. And it was a great time. You know, I mean, an old man in his rocking chair showing me how to do this when I was a little kid. And then all of a sudden he was angry. And I couldn't figure out what it was about. And he couldn't either, poor guy. But 10 minutes later, his wife had sent him in to apologize to me. And I don't think he knew what he was apologizing for, but he did. And I was okay. It was just like, he did a strange thing, but I didn't know it was, you know, something that's going on that's happens to old people, sadly. But it was just like that, you know, and yelling like a little kid, yelling to make a point because he's afraid that the point, he thinks that volume will make his point better.
Yeah, also it's a frustration knowing that there, you start understanding that you're having trouble, you know, engaging people properly and get frustrated by it. That's how that comes out. Anyway, Biden was saying that, you know, Trump's gone into hiding since the debate. No, he hasn't. First off, no, he hasn't. He's made appearances since the debate. He spent a lot of time at the golf club though, because he doesn't need to be out there because Biden and the Democrats are basically doing his work for him. And once again, I don't think either the 2016 or 2020 version of Donald Trump would have had the instincts to stay out of something like this. Yeah. He would have wanted to be all over it and get his name out in front of everything and make sure.
It's very encouraging. Very encouraging.
Yeah, I think he's learned some lessons, you know, which is good. But that does bring us to the fact that the convention is coming up in a couple of weeks now, and he still hasn't named his running mate. I think in large part because I think he was going to do it after the debate to sort of eclipse some of the post-debate chatter, because I think he expected Biden to do a lot better than he ended up doing.
Yeah, I did too. In fact, I think I wrote that in the column that would be a good thing if you think you're losing either in his, because he had the last word in the closing argument.
Right.
Then you pull that out or pull it out right after. But he doesn't need to. Yeah, I think it was what, 3 days before when he picked, are we ready for this? When he picked a conservative governor from the Midwest.
Yeah. I still think a conservative governor from the Midwest named Sarah Huckabee Sanders would be the best choice.
Oh, wouldn't she be smart? And she wouldn't lose her job. Wouldn't have to give up the job like, if he picked a senator like Rubio. Republicans. Well, they're American too, but Republicans, they like chief executives for president and vice president. They like even George H.W. Bush. You know, he was in politics, but he ran the CIA. He ran the RNC. He did something else. He had an oil company.
He was in the House for a brief period too, I think, at one point.
Yeah, he was in the House. And there was something else he ran. But anyway, he did. And we had his son, who was a governor. John McCain, but see, he didn't pull it off. But he looked for a governor as his vice president. Richard Nixon, I guess he wouldn't want to remember this, but Vicky Spiro Agnew, he was a governor.
yeah.
But if you go back, I think there's only two times since the Depression that Democrats have not picked a vice president. I mean, have not picked a senator as vice president. It was John Nance Garner in the first Roosevelt term, and then Geraldine Ferraro.
Who was in the House?
Yeah, she was in the House. And then McGovern picked a senator, but he had to quit. So then he went for Sergeant Shriver, who was ran the Peace Corps. But
it was also a Kennedy. Or yeah. Kennedy adjacent.
Yeah, Kennedy adjacent. Yeah, yeah. Related. Well, in other news, the Indians have six people in the All-Star game.
Oh, there you go. A Cleveland reference. What a shocker from Andrew Malcolm. A Cleveland reference. No, nobody saw that one coming.
And I'm not calling them their new name either. It'll always be the Tribe for me.
The Cleveland Baseball Club. Their new name stinks. They should have just gone with the Cleveland Baseball. They should have done what they did, you know, with the Washington
Washington football team did
for a while. And their team, their name is pretty lame too. The Washington Commanders.
Yeah, it doesn't fit in headlines either.
No, but Washington Commies makes a lot of sense to me. I love it for the Washington. Speaking of which, just to end on sort of a, I don't really have a joke this week. I don't know if you've got jokes this week or not.
No, but I have a fun story. Go ahead.
So just on a fun note, my wife and I watched a 7-part Netflix series on the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders called America's Sweethearts. And I kind of went into this, and I think my wife kind of went into it too, thinking, oh, this is just going to be sort of, you know, fluff and, you know, exploitation and stuff like that. It's actually a really good series. I'd highly recommend it. It treats all of the young women and the women inside the Dallas organization that run the cheerleaders, because it's all run by women inside the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, or Dallas Cowboys organization, with a lot of respect. They work very, very hard, and they do damage to their bodies. And in a way, I don't know if you ever saw the HBO series that's been going on now for several years called Hard Knocks, where basically this is the Hard Knocks.
The Hard Knocks of cheerleaders.
Cheerleading. Yeah. It really is. And it's really well done. And so it's not
That's what the F1 series is, Drive to Survive. It was inside, behind the scenes, inside how it runs. It's a great gimmick.
It is. But what you come away from is, first off, you come away rooting for every single one of these young women to make the team, and with a huge amount of respect for everybody involved. So, and I'm not a Dallas Cowboys fan. I know I moved to Texas, but I'm still Pittsburgh Steelers through and through when it comes to football. Well, you worked in Cleveland. I'm going to work in the Steelers. But I would recommend this. It's a really good docuseries, and I hope they come back and do it again, because actually I found it to be very interesting.
I would someday. I may write about it as one of my memories at Red State. But I had some background conversations with Ross Perot over the years, and he's a fascinating guy. And since he's passed on, I feel like I can talk about it someday. But he was big on veterans, especially wounded veterans. So he went from Dallas to San Antonio to the Burn Center, where a lot of the veterans were. See, what would that have been from? Was from Panama and somewhere else. Anyway, so he's there, and he said, well, is there anything else I can do for you guys? They said, yeah, I got some girls in here. So he went back and called his buddy Jerry Jones. They took Jerry Jones' plane. They took the Dallas cheerleaders down to the hospital, and the girls spent an afternoon talking with all the wounded veterans and posing with them. It was just a sort of a sweet story.
You know,
but the story I was going to tell had nothing to do with politics. And that is, anybody hasn't done this yet, I'm not a basketball fan at all. But, and I wasn't a bike racing fan either when I watched Lance Armstrong dominate things. And who was it? Bo Jackson in football and baseball and whatever. But anybody gets a chance to see these clips of Caitlin Clark. Oh my goodness. It's magic. I mean, she is magic. Doesn't miss. It's just, it's sweet. It's sweet to see someone like a machine. It's like watching Joe Montana, you know, in the last minute and a half of the Super Bowl, and he's looking to see who famous people are in the stands, and then he pulls off a Super Bowl win. Anyway, she's really good to watch. I don't know much about her, but it's a fun thing to watch as escape.
Well, there you go, folks.
Oh, speaking of escape. The two big, I mentioned this in the column too, the two big movies of the holiday weekend, 95-minute long cartoons. Talk about it. Talk about escape.
Yeah. Escape, that's what people want. That's why they go to the summer box office. Absolutely.
Yeah. And the box office has been hurting. So for them to get this, was it Despicable Me 19 or whatever it is, it's...
I think it's 4. Despicable Me 4, I believe, is what it is. And In-N-Out 2, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Not In-N-Out. Inside Out. Inside Out 2. In-N-Out is a different movie altogether. Inside Out 2, yeah.
In-N-Out is hamburgers. Hamburgers. Well, you go to In-N-Out for hamburger.
Oh, there was a movie called In-N-Out, but it wasn't a cartoon.
Yeah, I know.
Also, another Kevin Kline movie, though. So we started off talking Kevin Kline movies.
And that- I think Kevin Kline's voice is in Despicable, too. Steve Carell. Meryl Streep, there's a whole bunch of those good voices in the Despicable One.
Well, I love Kevin Kline, and I'll just say Kevin Kline's fantastic actor. He's done lots of wonderful things, dramas, comedies, all sorts of different things he can do. He can do farce, he can do witty, he can do all sorts of different things. I would recommend to people, and I actually wrote about this a couple of years ago, I would recommend to people the film The Emperor's Club. Because when it came out, it was sort of marketed as a Dead Poets Society, but that's not really what it's about. It's set in a boys' academy, like a prep school, but it's really about private ethics, public ethics, and the way in which the guardians of civilization end up betraying it.
Oh,
and it's really a superb reflection on this. The short story from which it was based was better. It just is. It's better. And I can't recall the name of the short story now, but because the end of the Emperor's Club kind of spins it into the whole honor the teachers thing, which, you know, is good. And it kind of makes sense in the context of the movie. That's not, it wasn't the end of the short story. It was a lot more cynical. The end of the short story was a lot more cynical than the end of Emperor's Club, but it's still a great Kevin Kline movie. And one of his best works, I think. And I'd again, highly recommend it as a, and reflect on what it means for republics such as the United States of America. Anyway, on that sort of a note, Andrew, we're going to have to wrap this up. Andrew Malcolm is, of course, the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com, a defender of Western civilization, and a scholar among scholars. Andrew Malcolm, we'll come back and do this again next week, sir.
Okay, buddy. Thanks, Ed. Thanks, everybody. See you later.